Hello.
Hello.
We're back again, and it's February.
I was about to say, welcome to February 1st.
Welcome to February 1st. My mood is already 1,000 times better.
We're going to talk about that in a second. I'm sweating. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Also, the weather, it's probably not the same in Florida because Florida is like a geographical oddity, but like the weather has been switching between like frigid, like teens, to like today it was like 70.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do. I'll put on clothes and I'll walk outside and literally it'll be like, oh, nope. Gotta go back in and redo this whole situation. And I don't, like, I'm used to it being kind of weird weather in the winter in the South, but like this is like drastic sort of dips and peaks.
It's been chilly here, like Florida chilly, I should preface.
Which is defined as 75.
No, it's been like in the 50s and but then it gets up into the 70s and so, and then it goes back into the 50s and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't understand. It's Florida, like
I guess it's global
it's
warming.
It's supposed to be.
Or not.
It is global warming, climate change, whatever.
I did hear a certain politician, which you can guess, be like, well, if global warming's, why is it so cold outside?
Why is it so cold? Because I don't know how science works.
yes, UNCG, just get rid of physics. It's fine.
I'm used to this kind of thing in Colorado because this is just like Colorado on a typical Tuesday. It's like, let's be all of the seasons in one day. But in Colorado, like I would have a coat that just lives in my car and, you know, you just always have layers and you're just like aware that regardless of what it was like earlier in the day, it could be totally different. I'm not like that here. Colorado Christy brain does not exist in Florida.
It probably would exist here.
I expect it to be hot. So I'm just like, what, why is it cold out? Why am I cold?
Why are my ears falling off?
Why can't my fingers move? Oh, it's because they're frozen.
Well, guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where we talk about the weather.
The weather.
Have you seen the guy on TikTok that does the weather to, like, incorporating rap songs now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so mad because my friend Matthew Kruger
get
was
low.
A weather man.
Get low.
And I want him to do it, but he is no longer doing the weather, and I'm super pissed about
it. It's probably a good reason to go back.
I know. I sent it to him. I was like, Matt, I need you to do this.
Oh, this is two name Matt. Matt, who gets two names. So some of Christy's friends get two names.
It's because I knew too many of them.
Spoiler alert, I don't.
I only have one Leah. Leah doesn't.
And that's all you need. That's all you need. So guys, we're recording today, speaking of Christy being more joyful, and I did suggest it, but then she said she had to, because of why, Christy? I want you to tell me why. Tell everyone why.
Tell the world. So, long story short, I am flying myself to Colorado.
Like, once again, she's driving the plane again.
I am getting on a plane tomorrow and going to Colorado so that I can go to Casa Bonita. I'm
now,
so excited.
For those of us that don't live in Colorado, which is probably most people.
Most people.
You're going to have to just dive in a little here.
I'm going to give you just like snippets of information. My first snippet is that there is a South Park episode about Casa Bonita that you should go watch. And it is exactly accurate. Like everything, people watch this episode and they think, surely this is not a real place, but it is. So it's a restaurant. It's in a strip mall on like the worst street in Denver.
How did that get named a historical site if it's in a strip mall?
A giant pink castle.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like kind of a big restaurant, but you wouldn't. But when you get inside, you enter into a different universe where, like, it's there's so much. It's so big inside. I can't understand how it fits into the space.
Artists. For all you nerds out there, I made a nerd reference.
I would assume the same.
Have you never seen Doctor Who?
I have not seen Doctor
Who. Lord. I made it through Scotland and didn't see Doctor Who.
I know.
Anyway, I digress. Sorry. Yeah. Casa Bonita.
So cool. You go in and you get into a line and you order what is only quite possibly the worst Mexican food you'll ever experience in your life.
Which really should maybe be a start for them if they're called Casa Bonita.
So
pretty, and this pretty
is,
house.
This is where I've heard conflicting reports. Some people say the food is now better. Some people say it's the same. I don't care.
I'm guessing you don't go for
the food. You do not go for the food.
Which for a Mexican restaurant feels like a lot.
You get into a kind of cafeteria line with your tray and give you your food. And then they lead you to a table and you can sit in one of many rooms. There's a magic room. There's a mining cave. There is like the kind of side area. And then there's also, you can sit near the cliff. So where the cliff is, has a big waterfall and then a pool. And there are cliff divers that performed. And sometimes they just dive. And sometimes they put on skits. So you get to watch like Black Bart defeat the sheriff and they fall into the pool, or sometimes it's an escaped gorilla.
Speaking of, have you seen that in Scotland, the monkey?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yes. My brother sent me a TikTok about it.
There's the monkey escaped
in the islands.
It's getting a lot of memes. You just gotta Google it. Christy.
I'm sorry.
Are these all your friends from Colorado calling you? No. Talking about, so please, it sounds like a Bass Pro Shop in medieval times had a baby.
Yeah, kind of.
Been to a Bass Pro Shop?
It is the same. It's like you go in and you're like, I thought I was here for food, but no, I'm here for entertainment. And they have the best sopapillas ever, which makes up for the bad food.
I don't know what that is. What's a sopapilla? It sounds like soap.
It's like a dessert. I don't know how to explain it. It's like a dessert. It's a flour something and you put honey in it.
Okay.
For
all of our friends who listen that are Mexican, you can help us, because I do know that for sure that one of my friends listens that's Mexican. So they can help us with
the explanation. It's like a flour.
I do like that I've asked you some like really difficult theology questions and you've not paused to the level. What
is a sopapilla? I'm just like, I don't know.
You were so excited about it.
You get unlimited sopapillas. So you raise your little flag whenever you want more. One time when I was in college, my boyfriend at the time ate 13 of these sopapillas. And it
what was your boyfriend's name?
That was too many. His name was Dustin. Joking. It was Dustin.
Oh, okay, never mind.
So anyway, and then you can go through Black Bart's cave and you can go watch a puppet show, or you can go play in the arcade, or there's a mariachi.
So your ticket is for like, or the reservation, you can just stay for forever?
For as long as it's open. So anyway, it got declared a historical landmark and then it went bankrupt and it closed down. And we were all
As you do.
And we were devastated. And then 2020 hit and like everybody was very worried about Casa Bonita. And then Matt Parker and Trey Stone, thank you for reminding me of their names, Leah.
Yeah.
Who are the South Park people.
Yeah.
They bought it. And then they're like, we're going to fix this place up and we love it like you do. So we'll fix it right. And so anyway, so it's been open now for, I'm not even entirely.
Where is it located? What city?
It's in Denver.
Okay.
But you have to be on a wait list and then you get an email and then you can make reservations. So obviously like you can tell I love this place.
It's coming across
in an inordinate amount. I told people for a very long time that I wanted to get married or not married. Sorry. Engaged behind the waterfall.
Guys, you heard it here. She's still available.
I was like, this is the most romantic location I can think of.
You want to confuse me and take me for my next marriage? I would be like, where am I?
What is happening?
I'm already married.
Anyway, so all my friends.
What if you got married there? Can you marry? Can you get? I feel like that would be more fun.
Engagement. You know what? I'd be on board with it. I would do it. My friends, we've had birthday parties there. We had like my friend's 30th birthday party was there. This has been like a whole thing for most of my life, but everybody's getting their emails now And I'm out here in Florida being sad because my friends are all going to Casa Bonita. And my dear friend Amanda was like, let's make this happen. So I'm flying out.
We're going to Casa Bonita. When do you come back?
I come back on Sunday.
All right, let's do the math.
It's a two-night.
Lord Jesus. She told me that and I immediately was like super happy for her because I know she needs it, and then also very tired. I was so tired for you.
Yeah, it's gonna be rough, but like 100%.
But worth it, I'm sure.
It's gonna be so worth it. I'm so pumped. Like, it's been years, obviously. It was closed for a long time, but like even before that, I was in Scotland. I couldn't, you know, and I've been wanting to go back to Casa Bonita forever, and I just love it. And yeah. So anyway, that's
so she said, well, I've got to because I'm flying to Colorado to go to Casa Bonita. And I keep a little file cabinet in my head. And I know she had told me about this place. And I was like, she was like, there's a wait list and like
I was
whatever,
like...
whatever. And I have to say, when Christy tells a story, she does give you like the bare minimum information to start with, and then you have to like peel back the onion. And so I pulled her back and I said, okay, so this is the place you said closed, or no, not that it closed, it was open a long time.
It was open. Why is there a wait list?
Yeah. She was like, it's only been open for a year. And I was like, okay, in my file cabinet you said the food was gross, the place was like a circus.
And he was like, why would you fly?
Why are you flying? And I said, and I thought you said it was open a long time ago in South Park did the episode. How's it only been open for a year? Why do you have to be on a wait list for a year? It's so many questions. I got about 3/4 of them answered. I still don't know why you have to be on a wait list for a year.
Because there are so many people, I think, that are so
I know,
excited.
But couldn't they just do like first come, first serve?
You know, I don't really know why they didn't do
that. It feels like a lot of admin for that.
Yeah, and I feel like probably it has to do with them wanting to make money. I know they had to redo quite a lot. Like, it was in bad shape.
An act of love.
And apparently there was like a lot of health code violations.
Oh my god,
that they had to fix up.
Like, they can't just make you sopapillas forever without there being some sort of codes.
I don't think any of us are surprised there were health code violations. Like, that seems. Correct.
Well, the first thing you did tell me was it's amazing, but the food is awful.
Yeah.
To which I think, like, you know, they're probably doing something wrong.
I mean, honestly, we would go get food first. We would eat somewhere else.
But that's terrible.
We would go to Casa Bonita, but they won't let you just go. You have to buy food because they don't, you know, obviously, otherwise no one would ever buy food there. And so we would order like a salad or whatever was like the most non-poisonous thing you could get. And
hepatitis C, baby. Watch out.
And whoever would come to visit, like my best friend from high school, Ronalee, came to visit. I made her go with me. And this is actually the picture I posted on our Instagram of the throwback to when I was 21. We're standing outside of Casa Bonita and she was just like shocked the whole time, but she was like, oh, so we're going to eat there. And I was like, no, we're going to eat first. And she was like, but what? And I was like, I just don't want you to die.
Oh my gosh. Well, I do want to go for the spectacle. I don't want to have to pay
for sure.
Eat.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I've heard reports.
Maybe, well, you'll have to tell us. Bring it back.
I will tell you all how the food is next week, but you definitely have to, like, it is one of the most amazing.
How have you? I've been in AR twice. Shocking. In Denver, and you've not taken me to this.
Well, it's not been open. Either times that you've been in AAR in Denver, it's not been open.
Sure.
Well, I guess this last, well, when was it in Denver? Not last year, the year before.
The year before?
Yeah, I don't know if it was open then.
Well, we'd have to get on a freaking year wait list. And
I know. Well, that's the
sadly,
other thing.
Casa Bonita was not in my radar that far ahead
of time. Casa Bonita, if it had been open, I had very serious plans of having my PhD graduation party there.
Yes.
But it was not open yet.
Well, she's flying up for that and to see her friends, but you know, mostly Casa Bonita.
I'm not even seeing very many people. It's really, it's like flying in, going to Casa Bonita, flying
well,
back out.
It's a quick turnaround. But you know, I'm excited to hear about it.
I'll post all the pictures.
Yes, please, because we've just really set this up. So today, listeners, we are throwing back, because there's been this whole trend about the throwback, which I do have a picture of me at 21, and okay, I will put up.
Because we gotta have equal 21-year-old pictures up there.
I know. His Stuart was like, you kind of look the same. I was like, I think I was like 50 pounds lighter.
Probably. Same. I had much smaller eyebrows and less of me existed.
I mean, here's the benefit, listeners. Christy, of course, is out of our duo, is like the stylish one, and I'm kind of the tomboyish one. And like, here's the benefit of that style choice, is that you don't fall into the traps of like, I never had small eyebrows because I wasn't fashionable.
Because you didn't do that. Well, you know what? I didn't think they were small.
Because you were comparing them to everyone else's.
It's true. In comparison, mine weren't actually not that small.
I probably look like a Yeti compared to, if you were to know me back then, you'd be like, geez, girl,
get that girl's eyebrows.
I know. Get her some flares and get her a going out top. Get those eyebrows small. But yeah, so I do have a throwback, and it's me in a soccer outfit. So, you know, perfect. On point. But so we decided we were going to throw back. And so we got that list of drinks that Stuart sent because he wants us to die.
Absolutely horrible list of drinks.
Who we got so many comments.
Wine and Mountain Dew. I want to throw up thinking about it.
We're going to probably do some of those. But Christy said, do you want to record this week? And do you want to do one of these? And I said, yes and no. So I wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't mentally prepared for it.
I wasn't either. I was maybe really next week. No,
I know. Maybe next week, because I do want to talk about Christian nationalism, because I've been reading about it. It feels like the right time.
It feels like drinking something absolutely disgusting.
Rageful appropriate. Is what I would call them.
Okay.
Sorry. It's just been what I've been reading, because my life is really happy. But anyway, this week we're throwing back, because everybody's throwing back to 21. And we decided we would do our 21 going out drinks. Now, yep. Christy had a weird ass going out drink. I don't know if that's a Colorado special, Casa Bonita special.
No, that was just a me problem.
What was your drink? You can at least mention it.
Yeah. So when I was 21, my drink of choice when I would go to bars was to get Midori and pineapple juice. So it's, I don't know if everyone is familiar with Midori, but
is that a Midori sour? Is that what that is?
No, it's not a drink.
It's just what you did.
It's just what I did. And every time the bartender or whoever was like, you want what now? Because it would just be Midori, which is fluorescent green, and pineapple juice. So it was like incredibly sweet and bright green. And that's what I drank a lot. But
I bet your insides are just permanently alien colored.
I think this explains many things about who I am now.
Maybe.
But no, after a little bit I switched. So I'm doing my later going out drink, which is a vodka Crystal Light.
Wait, what? Crystal Light?
I don't recommend this to anyone.
Because Crystal Light, is that a drink or is that what you put in a drink?
Potent is what you put in a drink. So what we would do, and this is not what I did because I can't survive that again.
Like soda water and then...
No, we would just have vodka and put a packet of Crystal Light in it.
What? I thought you were being thrifty and that you just got the soda water and then put the Crystal... You just did it
directly. We just did it directly into the vodka. So I have water in it today because, again, there's no way in hell.
Oh, gosh.
At my current life stage that I could do that again, but that's what we did, and I don't recommend it.
It's your life stage. Oh my gosh, that's wild and crazy.
So what is your going out drink, Leah?
Yeah, so mine, I was way too poor in Atlanta to go out because I lived in a fancy apartment and that was all I could do.
Well, this is why mine is vodka Crystal Light, is because we would make put them in thermoses and go out with them.
Oh, trust me, we did. We had that. It just wasn't a going out. It was a staying in drink. We had to stay in. It was a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, sometimes we didn't make vodka.
Yeah, I was going to say we had flavored vodka was our go-to in Atlanta, but where we just like hang out before it. Gosh, have you you've not even been to Atlanta since the last AR. You're going to be amazed.
It's going to change my mind about Atlanta.
But it's not even like me taking you to places. It looks like the place that is near the hotels and where I used to live, Old Fourth Ward. It's like they have a brew dog that's just on. Yeah. And they have a belt line that you walk. It's a like a walkable circle. And there's a brew dog, which is, by the way, a Scottish brewery. Yeah.
Love
it. It's crazy, crazy. Anyway. Crazy. So, it amazed me. I was like, I kind of got a little like, it's like what happened when the movies came. I got a little sort of miffed because I was like, it's too nice. Because Atlanta was always, when I lived there, it was a little bit like people would always be like, I hate going there. I don't. And there, we were always like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to feel. They're like, it's kind of rough. And I'm like, yep, that's all correct.
That's all correct.
Now go back home. Goodbye. And now it's just like all the move, it's just so different. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Anyway, I can't be mad because there's six way to go, Atlanta. Congrats on not being so grumpy. Anyway, so when I went to Scotland is when I started going out a lot. And the student union at Edinburgh University had £50. Mixers, booze and mixers, and £1.50, $1.50 if we translate, I suppose. Probably around $2 at that time.
I was gonna say that's probably like a $2 drink, which,
yep,
can you imagine? I would be dead.
I was most of the time, at least the first 2 years, anyway. So, and then I moved to Belfast and everything was fine. That's a story for another day. Anyway, so I would drink so I told you my dark liquor love is I would either do rum and Diet Coke or Jack and Diet Coke. Those were my two go-tos.
Yeah.
So tonight I'm doing rum and Coke because life's too short for diet drinks. Hence my 50-pound weekend.
I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I think
it's still really good. Like, I actually stand by rum and Coke.
Coke is pretty good. I like
it's a Cuba Libre.
Yeah, I like rum and Coke. I can't. Carbonated beverages and I aren't always super friendly. And so that was part of the reason I did the Midori pineapples, is that I was like, every time you put like a soda, I would drink a couple and then I'd be like, now I just want to burp all the time, or I'm just uncomfortable.
You're dancing with a guy and you're like, can you press my stomach?
You know? So it was like, I wanted nothing carbonated ever. And also some early drinking experiences really put me off carbonated alcohol. So
it tended to make me feel better. I think the bubbles.
No, it always made me so sick. And so
the thing that killed me was, there was a group of us that would go out in Edinburgh quite a lot, and they were all graduated. I was doing my PhD, but they all worked at like the bars around, and but they'd always get Jaeger bombs, which if you listen to my first podcast with Trip Fuller, and I had talked, he says, what would need to be at a party where you would just immediately walk out, and I said a Jaeger bomb fountain.
Absolutely.
A Jaeger bomb fountain. And that's a throwback. There was a time where it was just like intense Jaeger bomb situations, and much like you and your carbonation, I have a lot of bad thoughts about Jaeger bombs, which you can hear about that in Homebrew Christianity. Just look up Jaeger bomb fountain in my name, pop up, which is not how I wanted my life to go, but you know,
this is not how I expected people to Google us, but
but if needs must,
needs
must. So we're hearkening back to those days, and we decided to, which by the way, cheers. And I will say one of the things I'm drinking right now,
it's tasty. You know, I know why I drank so many of these.
Me too. It's really good. And now that it's not Diet Coke, even or whatever beverage. My dad was a Pepsi man, so he worked for Pepsi for like 30 years. So I was always real hesitant to be like, Coke, I love Coca-Cola. He'd be like, you mean Pepsi? And you're, I'm like, yes,
family.
Pepsi. We really weren't, but we were supposed to be. But yeah, so we are going back to that. And we're also doing a little bit of a flashback because I've seen a lot of stuff. And I know when we've gone to conferences, people had talked a lot about their early church days. And I thought if we were throwing back 21 in this, we could throw back to our experiences of our churches when we were younger. Yeah. And a lot of people I know listen to our podcast, and a lot of the podcasts in this sort of circle are maybe ex-evangelical, or they're folks who maybe are still in that world, or folks who are in high church now, and or, you know, maybe just don't do church at all, and that, or don't, or even Christian, who knows. But we decided to talk about what our experiences were in those early days, and so we're drinking. And we encourage you, that's what I was gonna say, we encourage you to drink if you drink, and and you can drink these with us. So find whatever was your 21
your favorite going out drink was, and then reminisce with us about church.
Ooh, I want to ask.
Yeah.
Let me ask. I wonder what do you guess is Stuart's going out drink?
Oh, gosh.
Stuart, when you first went out in the clubs of Aberdeen, what was your going out drink? Like your go-to drink?
First.
Don't think too hard.
Was it Bucky's?
Vodka and Bucky?
No, Bucky and something.
A vodka and something.
I was like, vodka and Bucky? How is Stuart alive?
Okay, so vodka was your go-to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cheap tasted nothing and got you drunk.
Cheap tasted nothing and got you drunk. Did you drink Buckfast ever? You've never had Buckfast? I've had Buckfast. Y'all, Buckfast, for those of you who are not the Scottish... I drank it once on a bonfire night.
I've only had it one time. It was so gross.
It's red wine, basically an energy drink. Just imagine.
But it's made
basically
by
your Mountain Dew and wine.
It's made by monks, and it's like really cheap, and it's very popular in certain circles.
And she's trying to say that the Neds, which, by the way, I wouldn't say it because she's from Colorado. There's people called Neds in Scotland, which is a derogatory term, and it's uneducated. Non-educated
delinquents.
Yeah. Usually hanging around, wearing tracksuits, whatever. It's all stereotypes. But the one thing that's maybe not a stereotype is their love of Buckfast.
They love
it. I would find Buckfast bottles in Glasgow all the time.
One time.
So somebody loved it.
One time I went to watch the Old Firm match, but not like at the match. We were at a Celtic pub and Celtic won. And we went outside, and there's just a complete and total riot happening. And the things I saw, but the amount of broken Bucky's bottles just littering the streets of Glasgow.
The problem is you feel good at first.
Yeah.
Like at first you're like,
this is amazing. And then
I'm introspective with wine. And then I'm also not tired.
Yeah. I'm very
excited
awake.
And I'm feeling.
Made by monks anyway.
But then imagine like being excited and feeling things, but then you take it to the next level.
The wrong means, next level.
Right. It means you're manic and you're pissed off. And that's really where it goes to in the end. I can confirm based on my poor boyfriend at the time. Anyway, I said, we can do another one. It's fine. Bad move. Anyway, so our churches, would you like me to start, or would you like to start?
You should go first.
Okay. I am the oldest child, guys.
Okay.
So we didn't move around a lot, Reply Churches. I know some people did, my family, the Baxters, had kind of lived in Ringgold. They're sort of a founding, that's probably not true, but there's a lot of them around. And like, if you walk around, they'd be like, oh, like, are you Baxter? Are you this or this or this? Like, that was sort of how Ringgold was. Tiny, tiny town, North Georgia. And so the First Baptist Church was just kind of the place that everyone of my family went to. And so we never really had my grandparents on my dad's side lived probably like 20 minutes away, and they kind of did some church hopping. They were not really like, they sort of moved around, but like this was sort of a, in many ways more, and I've talked about this on the podcast, is that my church experience is a little bit more cultural, I think, than sort of like evangelical, whatever. It was just sort of like, it was more like about the community and how we set up our day-to-day life and things like that. So my grandma and my grandpa went there, and so it was just kind of like that was what we did until she died. And so yeah, the First Baptist Church of Ringgold's famous only for that Dolly Parton got married there, which I put up. It's legit the only thing that happened in our town, full stop. There's nothing. There was American Idol. Laura.
Like, if there's only one thing that's going to happen in your town, that's a pretty incredible one thing.
It's a great one, because when that woman mentioned it, she was like, what?
I know. And I was like,
and like, if you could see my town, you would think that's amazing. Because it is a one street.
Yeah.
There's one main street. And like, that's it. Like, it is not, there's not a lot there.
Yeah.
And so, so we grew up there, and I was in the youth group and went and did all the things. Don't remember a ton of what I learned, if I'm honest. Like, it was because it just was life. Like, no one said anything controversial.
Yeah.
Politics were not a big thing. Like, it, and if they were, I didn't get it.
Right. Yeah.
Because everyone was just Christian. And so it just was sort of like, and if you were something that was maybe like what would be considered socially, I don't know, weird, like my grandma got divorced at one stage. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing later that there was backlash about that in some ways. But at the time, I didn't hear because I was a kid.
Yeah.
And people kept those things away from you. So to me, but I mean, I cannot imagine if you grew up in my town and you were, I don't know, a person of color, you were gay, or you were in the LGBT community, full stop. Like, any of these things that, I mean, if you were poor, like, you know, or, any of this, anything that made you, like,
literally any other religion, like,
oh my gosh, yes, like, they would talk about
them. Was there a Jewish person, like,
right? Yeah, like, you would hear people talk about, like, oh, this family owns all the hotels in Ringgold, and then there'd be this sort of like these very candid looks to each other. And I remember just being like, huh, I wonder if they just don't like those kids. They go to my school. I think they're nice. Like, it sounds stupid, but like, you'll know this if you grew up in the South, you're really sheltered. People don't talk a lot to kids, and they don't talk a lot to each other, honestly. Like, it's very sort of behind closed doors stuff happens. So to me, growing up in the church was just what you did. And, you know, it just was kind of, I guess, normal. When I would go to my other grandma's house, so she moved into the Pentecostal church for a while.
Oh, okay.
And that was maybe more, but again, still not evangelical. She was a lot more concerned. No one really in my family was concerned about, like, super spreading the message. It was like the Baptists were just like, oh, we got to get ourselves right so we don't go to hell.
Yeah.
And then the Pentecostals were like, they were like almost like trying to do like, let's heal this person from sickness. Like, they were supernatural stuff. Yeah.
Looking for direct signs of the Holy Spirit. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Like prophecies, like the end of the world's coming, whatever. Yeah. I never heard them concerned that we should tell other people that the world was coming. But they were very keen
on their knowledge of it.
But yeah, I mean, they didn't seem
other people's,
super concerned. So when I joke about the evangelical, I think this is what I mean, is part of the thing is, I think my growing up in the church was, I was in some older traditions.
Yeah.
And I think it was some of the independent churches that had more of that, like, sort of happy clappy stuff.
Right. And it's interesting too, because like, when you're looking at, I think a lot of times when we think Baptist, we immediately associate it with Southern Baptist or evangelicalism in specific.
Yeah.
But there's a whole slew of different types of Baptist.
I was in the Southern Baptist. I mean, that was the.
The ways that I think really determines what it means to be Baptist, I think we're in a kind of general sense, people don't always know. Like, what does it mean to be, I think being Southern Baptist today and maybe being Southern Baptist when you were growing up are also very different things.
Oh, for sure. Like, they did the 1980s, like, clamp down on women in ministry and stuff, which did affect me, I should say. That's when I first started to clock that something was going wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, as they become more entwined with the
political world,
the moral majority
kind of
movement. But like, there's lots of Baptists that aren't at all associated with those things. And
yeah, I work for the
word associate.
Yeah, Mercer is the Cooperative Baptist.
Yeah.
An American Baptist or...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they all have the... I had to take Baptist polity because I went to Mercer for my MDiv.
Right.
Even though I didn't get ordained in the Baptist church, even CBF. But it was based on this idea of the person who founded it was based on the four fragile freedoms, which is like freedom of interpretation of scripture, freedom of conscience.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember all the other ones. freedom of like running your own congregation, basically.
Yeah.
And there's another one that I can't remember. Anyway, point.
Which is, I mean, understandable given, I think, a lot of historical roots to Anabaptists and things like that, you know, like having too much authority. Because if you're looking at the Reformation, like the authority was really what the problem was, and the kind of corruption there. And so Anabaptists, and then as it trickles down into Baptists today, maintaining that amount of freedom has always been kind of a central tenet.
Yep.
That means that there isn't going to be as much uniformity through those churches. So,
and that's sort of when the convention started. I think that was one of the issues. And they've been kicking out churches with female ministers. And these churches are saying, well, wait a minute, you told us that we had autonomy and freedom, but now you're telling us we don't actually
have. Yeah, it's really interesting because now the Southern Baptist Convention is really going back in a very completely opposite way than its roots have ever been, of saying like, we need more authority. We have to have more. And that's, I mean, just wildly not Baptist, I think.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, not what I learned. I mean, what I learned is that they were trying to get away from that sort of.
Yeah.
But that's same you see with like the Republican Party's views on, let's, you know, abortion. I've been reading about that. I'm sorry. I'm just a hodgepodge of controversy. But, you know, pre-1980s, they were like, the government doesn't need to come into our medical.
Yep. Stuff.
Like, pre-1980s,
the Southern Baptists were fine with abortion. Like,
don't get in on my stuff. That's too much government. The federal government
did not become the thing until that Reagan era moral majority. You know.
Yeah. And that was so
the blame Reagan for everything. But
the Baptist faith and message, I think it's called, is where I can't remember the exact dates, but it was in the 80s that they came in and said women couldn't be ministers or whatever. And so that was, you know, I was a child in the 80s.
Right.
And that was a big deal, and I wanted to be a minister. So that was about when I started to realize that things weren't exactly like hunky-dory. So the church to me, when I remember it back, I remember my grandma, and I remember like potluck dinners and plays where, I think I've talked about this, where I would like wear sweatshirts inside out and be a sheep. Like, it's a lot of like and a lot of sitting chewing Wrigley's gum because my grandma thought that Wrigley's would make me not talk to my brother in church. It was a lot of like that sort of, and then family and things like that, and that's sort of the community, and us going to eat at Aunt Effie's. It was Aunt Effie's, but we call it Aunt Effie's afterwards. Like, it was a whole sort of like performance that sort of makes it seem trivial, but it was a little bit.
No,
like,
but it's a cultural ritual that you were.
It's a ritual, that's
good.
And
I think too, that has also contributed to why like your shifts and changes theologically and moving into the denomination you did get ordained in and all of that has been easier, I think, for you.
Yeah.
And for your parents, like, your parents are not.
No, they didn't care.
Concerned, you know? And it's because there's, I think, a more, I had to teach about Yoruba today, so my brain is a little bit fried.
Well, I just remember one time they told me I had to go up front so that I could get baptized. And they said, like, do you believe in Jesus? And I was like, yeah. What else am I going to believe in?
When you have that kind of basis of, like, flexibility, and it's just, like, like the freedoms and all that, then, like, the shifts and changes aren't going to be as freaky or scary or whatever.
And I think because culturally everyone was a part, at least in, not, I'm not going to say everyone, that's not true, but like the majority, I would say, were a part of this one religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it wasn't as, like, my parents had pretty strict ideas around things like, you know, like alcohol. And I know they struggled when, like, I lived with a boy at some stage, but it wasn't enough to like be like, oh, she's going to hell or anything, right. Which I feel like some of the evangelical groups would be like, oh, that's it. Like, it was like, well, you know, it's maybe not my favorite thing, like, because they grew up in that world, but like, you know, mm-hmm. and then that was it. Like, it wasn't, I mean, we just kind of moved on. We just didn't talk about it. That's also a Southern thing.
It's also a Southern thing.
Just don't talk about it.
Just pretend like it's not.
It means it doesn't exist if you don't talk about it.
Yep.
So it was weird because you saw it in bursts and flashes, and it would come to the head really intensely. But if you were a kid or your parents were sheltering you, which I'm very certain mine were, it just seemed like, as you said, a ritual. It was something that we did. And so then when I went to college, I really opened my eyes to all the different ways that people could be. And that changed my views a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think because I never really like felt, one of the things that I think is unusual is I never felt pressured to do it because I wanted to see my family. Like, I never felt like I had to go, even though I definitely had to go. Like, I wasn't like, it just, because I'd done it since I was a baby.
Yeah.
It just was what you did. It was sort of like me going to basketball practice. It was like, well, this is what I do. This is my life now. Like, it's not, it was only again when I went to college and I woke up on a Sunday and I was like, oh gosh, I missed church. And then I was like, I'm at college.
I did not go. Yeah.
No one's telling me.
No one's making me go to church. Yeah.
But that was the first time in 18 years. And it was just like, you know, I kind of felt guilty about it.
That's so funny.
Yeah. That's my world. And I will say it comes with its own demons. Like, sure. I have a lot of stories about how, again, people were treated who didn't fall into line. I do have stories about that. I have stories about that you all have read about about me trying to get ordained.
Yeah.
So like there's a lot of like residual stuff I had to get over my semester being an atheist, which was amazing. Where I dyed my hair, which, like cut it in a weird cut and thought I was being cool.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
The whole time I was telling God I didn't believe in God anymore.
You're like, God, I don't believe you anymore.
I don't even care about you.
I don't even think you're real, even though
you're not real. So leave me alone. Why am I talking to you?
Why am I talking to this thing I don't think is real? No. Not to, I think it's funny because I know a lot of people who, when they went through like I'm kind of shedding a certain belief or something, like the first thing you do is to change your hair, and it's such a specifically I think kind of something that girls do, but
and that's where I actually experienced the evangelicals for the first time was through the Campus Crusade stuff and all of that, and they'd be like, are you a Christian? I'm like, yeah, I grew up in the church,
and then they'd be like, that doesn't count.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that caused me to spiral because I was like, but what do you mean? I grew up in the church, I've been baptized. They're like, yes, but do you have Jesus in your heart? And I was like, I don't know who else is in there.
Right. You have to pray our very specific prayer.
That's right. But that was the first time I'd sort of experienced that. Like I and it blew my mind, and it did send me in a spiral, I will say.
I can imagine. I mean, because it's a very strange thing to tell somebody that they're not the religion that they've been following their whole lives.
I know. I was like, call my grandma.
To be like, you don't.
She'll tell you.
You don't count. And I think that's part of, again, the biggest divide. And this is why I think it's so important to like keep in mind how many Christians are not evangelicals, and that the concept of evangelicalism being so exclusive is not how most Christians operate. Because there's so much focus on with evangelicals of like, who's not a Christian? Like, that's your whole focus is, who is not a Christian? Who is not part of the club?
I will say to defend evangelicals is that not everybody, but most people that we knew in that town, if you weren't another religion, you were probably Christian. So it kind of made it like, if you were to, I would love to see you at the local rodeo with the megaphone. People would be like, what are you doing?
What we all know this.
We all know this. You're
but good. The focus, I think that's the biggest difference though, is the focus for your upbringing, your experience was inclusivity. Like everyone can be included in this unless they're specifically saying they're not, you know?
Yeah.
And to be fair, that can be because they're Black. Like, it could be.
Oh, 100%. You know, like, oh, we were completely segregated.
There's definitely stuff that is problematic in that. But, like, there wasn't a, like, you're not trying to sniff them out. Like, that person doesn't say the prayer correctly, so I think they're not part of our group, you know?
Yeah, our stuff was more social. Like, that person is... drinks too much, or that person got divorced.
Yeah.
That it's not about having Jesus in your heart. It was a lot more about, like, that person was at the club.
Whereas, I remember growing up, there was a lot more, like, that person says they're a Christian, but they're not. Like, there's, like, I remember...
that's like that movie, what is it, with Mandy Moore?
Was it A Walk to Remember?
No. Oh. The one where she's, Yes,
saved. Okay.
She throws the Bible at that girl and says, I am filled with the Holy Spirit.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that movie. Because I remember growing up and my dad telling me that Methodists were not Christians.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had the Methodist fight a lot.
You know, like, and I don't know what is happening that Methodists are the ones that, like, got
singled They're too lefty liberal, I guess. That's what my grandma said. She's like, those Methodists.
I never got the, like, scoop on why we didn't like them, but they were... He would point out Methodist churches and be like, that church isn't real. And I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I do want to emphasize that, like, I don't want to paint a picture that is inaccurate of this church. I'm simply giving my experience.
Oh, for sure.
And if you ask some of my friends that grew up there, like, I have friends that were atheists and who were prominent families in that world,
mm-hmm.
and who were of different religions, and they had a really, really hard time.
Yeah.
So I really, really want to emphasize that I was middle class, I'm white.
Yeah.
I grew up in that church. I had family in that church. Yeah. And the one obstacle that I came across is when I was a woman and wanted to be a minister. And I mean, if that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you're anything that falls outside of that world, then tough.
Yeah. Well, and that's, that's what I'm, I think the inclusivity part is, like, if you wanted to be part of the group and you had enough privilege, you could be part of the group.
There we go. That's a good summary for me. So,
I think that, and that's where I think it becomes more social. And like I said, then it was a little easier for you to leave.
Yeah.
Though again, for many people would have been horrible.
I mean, I didn't want to. I wanted to be a Baptist, but they just wouldn't let me.
We should also mention that you have a chapter in a book about this.
I do. It's feminist trauma theology. And I talk about the part of this church that did traumatize me, which was me trying to get ordained.
Yeah.
And it's a really, it was an important thing for me to put out. So
yeah. Well, and it's a really great collection of essays on different traumas. Oh. So I highly recommend the book.
So Christy, how was your life?
Mine was so strange. And I also want to point out that my experiences are very much my experiences and not necessarily like.
Yeah.
What
I think that's what we're both saying. This is how we viewed it. We're the narrators of this.
Yeah. And I think too that like there's a lot of stuff that I view as very positive about how I was brought up and I'm really grateful for. And I also acknowledge that in those same respects, like it was shitty for other people. So my parents became Christians when they were adults and like they both were in Christian families, but more like yours, like culturally Christian, not mm-hmm. kind of rigidly. And my mom's mom had converted from Catholicism her dad converted. I can't remember. One of her parents had been Catholic and then had to not be Catholic anymore to get married. And I can't remember which direction it went, but so they both were just like nominally aware of church until they were adults. And then they got really gung ho about it. Mm. At some point. And so
Do you know what happened to make them? Did they go to like a meeting?
Well, they both got divorced. Not from each other. They had it's their second marriage. And so when my dad got divorced, he had three kids and he ended up with full custody of the three kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the 70s. So that was super abnormal. And he was kind of really struggling with like how to be a good dad, and obviously had to work full time and all of this kind of stuff. And I think he was really searching for help and community. And he ended up finding one of those, the many parachurch organizations that exist out there. And so a lot of other men kind of, he uses the word disciple, but like kind of mentored him into evangelical Christianity. and I, like, I know they're very, they're for the most part, like very kind men. I really, yeah. really lovely.
I mean, when I think there are evangelicals with really good hearts. They want, oh, you, to go to sure.
yeah.
want
and like,
you to go to heaven.
They just, yeah. And that's the thing. Like my parents genuinely, their whole concern is just that they just really desperately want to be in heaven with everyone they like, you know? Yep. And so if they like you, which they like most people, they just want to make sure you're going to be in heaven with them. And that's, it's kind of overtaken a lot of their understanding of things though. And that's where it gets sticky. But yeah. The weird part about me, though, is that because all of this happened and then I was born, they were still like new to the whole thing. And so when I was growing up,
you were also a very, you were almost an only child, right? Like,
yeah, my siblings are a number of years older than I am. And mm-hmm. so like, we're close. I love my siblings, but like they were out of the house for most of my childhood. And so my parents were like trying to figure it out, which meant we switched churches all of the time. And to be fair, they still do. They're not great at sticking with churches. But like I always joked that we never went to a church for longer than 4 years because something would happen and my dad would be like, nope, like we're gonna switch churches. And sometimes it was within the same denomination, but sometimes it wasn't. So like we went to Baptist churches, Presbyterian churches, non-denominational churches, like all over the place. And so sometimes I was in a more mainstream church, like mainline, big, you know, older denomination, and there would be some structure and that kind of stuff. And then sometimes it would be like a real, like the pastor has no actual training and no one's actually aware of you know, like real kind of sketchy. But my parents also weren't really strict about any of it, so we didn't go every Sunday when I was growing Ooh. up. In Ooh. fact, my dad had season tickets to the Denver Broncos.
Okay, you told me this. Yeah.
He got them, he was in 1960 when the franchise started. He got season tickets and we had them until I was 10, and so every Sunday we were at the Bronco game.
That's why in Jesus's land, Jesus's chosen country.
It's on Saturdays.
It's on Saturdays. Just saying.
So like, I genuinely didn't know that people went to church during football season. Because we did.
That's amazing. I can trust you. We were there.
I was like, there's no church on Sundays. It's September, you know, like,
yeah.
And then I found out that people did go and they were horrified that we were staying home to watch football. And I was like, and so I remember feeling very outside of everything when I was growing up because we weren't strict enough and I wasn't in a youth group and I wasn't, cause I went to, speaking of saved, I went to a private Christian school. And so my parents felt like that was enough. And they were like, you don't need to be in a youth group because you're already,
you live a youth group.
Like you live a youth group. And,
that would have been so expensive for my parents.
My mom taught at the school, so I went.
You told me. Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, they were very insistent that I not get too sheltered. And so they made sure I was in programs that were outside of the school. So, like, I danced through college and I was.
That's actually a really good perspective from your parents.
It was. And again, I'm unbelievably grateful for this. And then when I wanted to go to college, and this is perhaps the greatest thing my parents, maybe the second greatest thing my parents ever did, but like
the first one being making me
no. But my parents were like, you need to go to a state school, you need to get out of Christian schools. And I had been kind of set on going to this little Christian school, and they were like, no, like you cannot do that. You need to get out into the world. And like,
which I did. I went to a Christian. Yeah. I mean, my parents didn't say anything about, my parents hadn't, well, dad had gone, had visited UGA for a couple years.
But, yeah, well, and I mean, I just so,
but a lot of people didn't go to college where I was from, so again, that's a really good thing that your parents had, was the intuition. Yeah
my parents were very like, you need to get out. And I again, like, I appreciate so much of that, because I didn't get the brunt of evangelicalism until I got to college, kind of like you. Campus Crusade was basically my initiation to evangelicalism, and so I'm so grateful, because while I had, obviously, I like was in churches and stuff, and I knew a lot of things, like I knew about Focus on the Family, but I didn't get the Brio magazine or anything like that. Like, I got 17 magazine, and
someone did. You know what I found in my Wonder treasure box? I had a Rock for Life T-shirt that has a little fetus with a guitar on it.
Oh my god!
I know.
I remember one time somebody tried to get me to go to something that was like the anti-abortion thing, and they showed me,
this is all college, like I said, that was all
it was in, it was my college too, and they were like, we're going to do this protest, and they showed me one of their billboards, and I was like, I'm absolutely not standing with that, that's really gross. Like, and it wasn't because I was like, this is here, I was like, that picture is genuinely disgusting. I don't want to stand,
but this is the sort of thing that I'm talking about, is like, Southern Baptist would have been absolutely abhorred by the idea of it, but I never heard of anyone doing it. Yeah. I never even heard of it, because it would be too much about, so I didn't even get sex talk growing up, Christy. No sex talk.
Because
it was,
I remember my sex talk.
It was, no, because you don't talk about, this is what I'm talking about, is there was so much stuff. I lived in a plane that was like this plane where nothing bad happened, and like, where life didn't happen, and like, if I had had one thing that I did, I'd be on another plane, but because I didn't,
my parents didn't really lucky. Have that luxury either, because like, there was too much obvious stuff going on. Like, my parents, again, dad had been divorced and had the three kids, and then
and they
very opposite way, like, they told me everything when I was a kid. Maybe I needed to know less stuff.
Oh, never mind. I said, that's good.
Openness
and honesty.
There was definitely some stuff that I feel like probably they could have had that conversation without me being at the kitchen table.
I guess because you were like the last one. They're like,
they were tired. You know, like, poor dad. When I graduated high school, my brother's birthday, he turned 35 the day of my high school graduation.
Jesus.
Like, my dad had a kid in the house for 35 years. They were very tired. It's not their fault.
But they also, you know, honestly, because I think about, my parents had me when they were like 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would have told them at 21, 22 would look very different than what I would tell them at my age now.
Yeah.
Like, insanely different.
Yeah.
So, like, I think, like, if I had had kids or, you know, whatever, is, it would look different.
It would, like, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, my siblings and I had different childhoods because they had, I mean, not only just dad being divorced, but, like, you know.
You had different versions of your parents.
Yeah, you get different versions of your parents. And so, like, you know, my siblings went through some of the weird church stuff with them, but, and this is where I think, like, current day, my parents are much more concerned about, like, my theology, and it upsets them more that we disagree on stuff, and it upsets them less that my siblings disagree about stuff, you know.
Is it because your PhD is in theology?
No, because that, it's upset them since before then. But.
Okay. You don't have to say anything you don't want to.
No, I mean,
not,
like,
this is not like a Nazi interrogation. You can simply be like, no.
It's just that, like, I grew up with the sense that, you know, there was a correct way to be Christian.
I hear you.
You had to do it correctly. You had to say the correct prayer.
That's right. Know?
And my siblings didn't get as much of that as I did.
Yeah.
And so, and still, my parents both are like, we just want to make sure all of our kids are in heaven. Like, that applies to all four of us. But, like, I think there's a bit more pressure with me because I grew up in that. And so disagreeing with their current church is a very big deal, you know?
It's funny because Stuart didn't grow up in the church, and because he's Scottish.
And
guys, it's geography. I'm sorry. But like,
it is.
It's a lot. I mean, it's not all geography, but a lot of it is.
A lot of it. Well, I mean, even look at us. Like, you're from the South, and we're 1 year apart. Like, our experiences of the same church are vastly different.
Hugely different. Like, I had no choice. If I was born in India, I'd be Hindu. Like, probably. Yeah. Numbers wise. And he didn't grow up in the church. I remember he asked my dad to marry me, and my dad made a slow mention of it. And then Stuart, I think, was just like, well, you know, I'm open to anything or whatever. Never talked about it again.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of being Southern.
And see the
never spoken of again. Now he's the most beloved child of literally maybe our entire family.
I mean,
because he's quiet and he works really hard. So they're like, wow, he is the best.
And see, like, my parents, I remember my dad interrogating my sister's husband at one point. Mm. Like, they had been married for years. They had children. And my dad was like, I still need to know. Like,
yep.
You know,
I think, you know, it may change as they get older. Because, again, they have me at their younger parents. But, like... Mm-hmm. I don't know, because it's, again, I think part of the Southern thing is being religious, but also that not being rude.
Right.
And it really is a tug of war between that. Because you kind of have to be rude to be evangelical.
You do have to be rude.
Like, because you have to ask really personal questions and get, like,
answers. Because I did join.
Rude. I'll say intrusive. You have to be intrusive.
So I joined Campus Crusade. I was in Crusade for like 2.5 years of college. And I remember when they made us go evangelize, we had to take the little track
to
the dorm rooms. And like,
It
was the most miserable experience of my life.
I would have been so embarrassed. People you knew?
No. Okay. Thankfully, we went to a dorm. I didn't know anybody. But like, one room and it was just, it was so awkward because it starts out, I don't know if you remember, it's the four spiritual laws. And it starts out that we have all sinned and fallen short. And then you're supposed to like talk about it and be like, do you know how you've sinned? And then you have to like,
this is the intrusive part.
And it's so uncomfortable. And I hated every single moment of it. And then I remember too, and this is again, part of how I grew up and stuff and I'm grateful for, but it's also just like how my brain works in terms of all of this, but I was like, I just don't really want to go around like telling people that they need to become Christians and then leaving, because we would never see these people again. Like, we would go do this and they'd be like, okay, and we pray through this prayer, and then you just never talk to that human again.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what?
There's no discipleship. It's just getting the checkbox.
Yeah, it's getting the checkbox. And I remember bringing it up several times and being like, I feel like instead of just trying to get, because we would go to these meetings and be like, how many people got, or did you get to pray? And that's all they cared about was numbers. We just wanted to put numbers on the board, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like, could we follow up with these people though? And they'd be like, well, did you leave them the information about
the Bible study?
Like, they can come to Bible study if they want to come. And I'd be like,
oh my gosh.
That feels like and then we only had one Bible study. So for 4 years in college, like there was multiple groups, but the actual thing that you studied, there was just one thing. So for 4 years, it was the same study over and over.
Oh, and wow.
I had a class. It was the Bible is literature, and it was another class. So I couldn't go to Bible study.
And they probably thought you're going to hell.
They did. They kicked me out. They kicked me out of my leadership position in Crusade because I couldn't go to Bible study because I was going to class, and they said that my priorities were wrong. And I lost my entire mind.
Oh gosh. I was in Youth for Christ, which is like the
group. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I think that's like the Billy Graham group, but yeah.
But yeah, I lost my mind and I yelled at
the
leader. I was like, you guys are just, I was like, this is this, I've done this Bible study already twice. I don't need to go through it again. This is a class for college that I'm paying
for. How did that
for.
Go down?
It didn't go down well. I got written up for having a problem with authority.
Written up by who?
People.
The crusade?
The crusade people.
Oh, how do you write? It's like, did you get a ticket? Do you have a fine?
No, they just yelled at me. And then I was like, hey, well.
Bye.
I guess I'll stop coming to crusade then. And this is, again, one of those situations where, like, I have some of my best friends that I still am friends with. I met through this group and, like, are lovely humans. But, like, I don't have a lot of positive things to that. Like, my experience was not amazing, you know?
Yeah,
but it was not as bad as very many other people's experiences were. So,
yeah, I did stuff with that, but it was more like mentoring young people in high school. Mm. And it was not as evangelical that I remember. And yeah, I mean, a lot of them are, I mentioned someone today that has the vineyard. They were in Youth for Christ with me, actually. That's how I know them. They were in my wedding.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's like some of my good friends, but you know, I think it wasn't, well, again, you only have your one perspective, but I think I did get kicked out my senior year too, because I had to take 18 hours because I was a double major in psych and religion. And I was like, I've got to get through this. But yeah, I mean, and I ended up dating the leader who went to, you know, Rhema Bible Institute.
I don't know.
It's not Kenneth Hagin. Who is the guy? Anyway, it's not like one of those like faith healing.
Oh, okay.
It's in Oklahoma. That should tell you. So it was just like this whole, and I remember thinking, I was like, I have to get out of this. Like, it, none of it. And I would tell my parents, and it's funny because my parents were not in that world. So they would be like, what are you doing? And I would tell them, I remember one time I called them and I said, they told me that I'm not really going to heaven. And I remember my parents were flabbergasted. They were like, what are you talking about? What are these people telling you?
Yeah.
Like, they had no idea, because back then, you know, you went to church your whole life, you got baptized, like, that's it. You know, you did your thing. Like, it was kind of being Catholic in a way. You just checked your box. And I said, no, they told me I had to do this thing. And then I had to get baptized again. And mom and dad were just like, what
no.
are you talking about? And to their credit, I will say, I think they supported me throughout all of this. And then at the end, they actually left when I got ordained. They left the Southern Baptist Church. My grandma had passed, and they left that church, and they still kind of look for churches, and they're still deeply, deeply religious. But I think when I got ordained and they heard about how hard it was for me, like, that's not I think that was pretty brave for them, because that was a big deal.
Yeah, kind of the same. My parents have always been very supportive of me, and I mean, they are very proud. My dad tells everybody he meets that I have a PhD, and he goes, my daughter is a doctor, and it's like, very cute, and I really do love it a lot. But like, and I remember when I told them that I'd gotten kicked out, they were so furious, because my parents are very education minded, so they were like, you're in school for an education. Why in the world would they say that's the wrong priority? But like,
I agree.
I still agree. Anyway,
I'm concerned about your soul.
But I do. It's very complicated, and I think that's what, you know, both of us have experienced, is complicated, because I have so many positive things that I did gain from the places that I was in and the ways that my parents raised me and all that. And at the same time, I know people who were in those same places. Like, there was, like the movie, there was a Jewish girl at my high school, and we were all like constantly kind of concerned for her.
Oh, no.
Like, are you going to heaven? We don't really know what to do, because like, we're supposed to be connected to Judaism, but we don't really understand how.
Well, they're not very good at explaining that part.
No, they're not. And like, I don't remember. I'm sure that many people tried to convert her. I I feel like that's obvious. I don't remember it happening, but again, I didn't live her experience. So, but like, it's those kinds of things where like, I appreciated a lot of things. I know people at my school who had horrible time. And so, yeah, it's
same.
Complicated. I mean,
it is, but I also think some of it's straightforward. Some of it is just that they are exclusionary. I mean, that's the thing. Is like, I think to my Baptist church, which was far easier for me to navigate than Youth for Christ or any of the evangelical stuff. But it, you know, at the expense of what? You know, me being a legitimate human who can talk and teach people. Like, you know, my grandma being able to leave an abusive situation. Like, you know, I think, you know, what are you losing in these things? Absolutely. Like, and if you represent a group who is in that excluded group, like, geez, I left that hyper evangelical group. And I knew that it wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't leave the Southern Baptist. I was kind of forced out. And I did eventually, but I was forced out. But I think, like, you know, what if in both senses I chose to leave. What if you didn't get a choice?
Yeah.
Like, what if you just were never just included or you got kicked out?
Yeah.
You know, like, that must feel terrible.
It must. And especially too, like, it makes me so angry to feel that people's assumption is that this is the only way to be Christian, because I still really love Christianity in a lot of ways, and I want it to be open enough for everyone to experience it in positive ways and not have these kinds of exclusions, and to kick people out for these stupid things.
Yeah.
It makes me really, really angry.
Yeah. And my friends who are surrounding me that have been hurt or didn't grow up in it or whatever. And they're just like, oh, you're a part of that group. And I'm like, how could we change that? Like, I have friends in my close group here in Charlotte that are Jewish, that are Hindu, and I'm Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm usually the only one that's sort of like, people are like, ooh, you're Christian?
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's Jewish. And I don't mean that rude. Or she's Hindu.
Yeah.
You know, we just celebrated with her at Passover. No one was screaming
about
that.
No one was upset about that.
No one was mad about that. And I think, you know, but those religions have cultivated themselves in a better way.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they just... And
well, I think that, and also being... being that people have less experience with them.
Yes.
You know?
Also, they're more, quote, foreign or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, I mean, Hinduism in India is not going to have the same kind of, like, everyone's just like, oh, that's fine. Like, there's a lot of complications there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's a Hindu in America.
And she's a Hindu in America. So it's very different. But, like, but yeah, like, a lot of people have negative experiences with Christians, and so it puts them, and rightfully so. I don't want it to sound like I'm saying, like, no, come back, you know, or whatever. Like, I do. I would love to have a positive experience for them. But
yeah, if you were a Muslim
understand it why they're be, like, we're rejecting this because it was horrible. But it makes me so sad because I feel like there's so much beautiful things that I've gotten from it.
Mm. And that Jesus didn't say that, Christy.
But
Jesus didn't have no prayer. He had one prayer. It didn't have nothing to do with what we're handing out in a tract.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, truly, like, and it comes back, we've said this before, but like, it's about loving people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not loving people by going like, hey, you believe this wrong.
If you showed up to my dorm room with that track and me growing up in the church, I would have been like, that girl is batshit.
I mean, get
her out.
Genuinely, we were in Colorado.
I know.
I was at like the most conservative state school in Colorado too. So it's not even like we're at Boulder or something where you're trying to.
But I, a Christian, would look at you and be like, no.
I mean, stop. And no. I think probably a lot of people did that. I went to one room.
Were you the worst evangelical ever?
I am a terrible evangelizer because I don't want to do it.
I made a comment in my book preface that said I'm the worst evangelizer ever, except for practical theology and Georgia football.
But at the same time, I have the
skills. Although Christy still supports Ohio, guys, I'm trying for her soul's sake.
I've had so many students who've come to me and been like, here's how Christianity has treated me badly. And like, we can have good conversations. I'm great at those, but I can't bring you into Christianity.
I mean, I can if you want to know.
No, I can do it if you want to know. I'm happy to just like answer.
I can tell you about Jesus, like if you don't know, but like, we're going to have a long-term
it's going to be a long-term. And also, like, I'm going to be, like, answering every question that you can possibly ask me.
I'm not going to let you off the hook.
No.
Like, not in the terms of, like, if you hate it, you can't go away. But, I mean, like, if you're into it, I'll be like, all right, well, let's talk some more. Like, 'cause I think that's one of the things that really annoys me about, like, the pamphlets and the megaphones is that, what are you doing? I mean, you're not investing in the people. Like, they're are they going to keep at it? I don't know. Like,
no, you're just scaring them away.
It's like, I go to a wine tasting and they sell me a wine.
The time they're like, I'll pray this stupid prayer so they leave me alone. You know, like.
But I went to a wine tasting and the guy was like, so you're going to get good wine from now on? And I was like, yeah, you've convinced me. And then I never saw that man again. And I bought a really expensive bottle of wine, and I've never bought another one. I'm not saying that's like evangelism, but it maybe is.
It maybe is. Yeah. I mean, it's the same, you know how it is. Oh my gosh, Leah, I was walking into Sprouts the other day.
What's a Sprout?
Oh, do you not have Sprouts? It's the best grocery store. I love it so much.
But is it all veggies or is it? I mean, I don't know. It could just be that I don't know about it.
It's not all veggies, but it is pretty healthy. It's real crunchy granola kind of like Whole Foods, but much cheaper.
Okay.
And smaller. Anyway, I love Sprouts. It's the greatest. Okay. Also, they have really good cookies. So if you know. Anyway.
This episode is sponsored by
Sprouts. This episode is sponsored by Sprouts.
Only one of us knows about both of these things. Enjoy.
So I'm walking in and there was do you remember Dare?
Yes, I have the shirts.
There was a Dare table. There was this man and he was like, hey,
something resistance education.
Hey, did you do Dare? And I was like,
yeah,
I think I did. And he was like, do you remember what it's about? And I was like, drugs?
It was, I think Barbara, wasn't it? The Bush?
I don't know. Barbara Bush, maybe. And he goes, well, now we're focused on mental health. And he gives me this whole spiel. And I gave him $5.
Oh, well, that's nice of you. He talked with you at least and explained it. Although, how does their acronym work with the mental health?
I think they just kept the acronym.
Okay.
I don't know. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know.
Rum addled, I would try to come up with something.
I told you everything I could tell you about Dare. I just know that I gave him $5 because I just was like, well, you've talked to me and now I feel like I should give you something.
I will say, listeners, Christy I always say she's far nicer to me, but you do speak to people more readily. Because I immediately shut down and walk away.
Leah is
the dark heart. I'm the new dark heart.
I remember when I lived in Scotland, they regularly were like, you have to stop trying to make friends with everyone you talk to, like everyone around you.
Yeah.
Because I would just start talking to everybody and they'd be like, Christy, you're in Scotland. Like, this is not appropriate. And I'd be like, I can't help it.
But also the people who come up to you, when I love, and this is no diss to PETA, but when PETA comes up to me and they're like, what about the animals? I'm like, you have no idea what my life is like. Like, they'll come up to me and note all the time, like with their little lanyards, like, and they're like,
I am already helping the animals.
They were like, there was this one girl and she was like, but there's so many in the kennels. And I'm like, I just bought $80 dog food.
You know, okay, so I tell people this regularly, that whenever you get a tattoo, there's unintended consequences that come with your tattoo. No matter what you get, there's something that you haven't anticipated that's going to happen. And like my paper airplane tattoo, I have been yelled at by numerous strange men because they don't like my paper airplane tattoo.
That's one of my faves of yours.
I know. Lots of people love it, but there are random men in this world who are incensed by it.
But is there a reason?
It varies. It's not one particular reason. It just seems to be
That's a good tattoo.
It's weird. It's so weird. The one, though.
Listeners, it's just a paper
plane. It's just a paper plane. I got it for $25 on
Friday. It's really cute. It's on the back of her arm. It has like the little dots behind it. It's very whimsical and sweet. I don't understand. This is much like your speech at beer camp. I don't
understand. It sets them off, though. They get so mad. But I have an orange whale on my foot. Mm. And there are two consequences of this tattoo that I didn't anticipate when I got it. One is that a lot of people think that it's in reference to Jonah and that I somehow really love the story of Jonah.
Classic.
The second is that when the PETA people see me, if my whale tattoo is visible,
your butt's out,
they call it out. They'll be like, "You love whales."
You're like, "No, I hate whales."
And I'll be like, "Oh no."
All I do is drink whale oil all the time.
I have whale corset.
Instead of like a stag head, you just have a whale.
A whale head.
But let's circle back to the airplane. What is the stuff that comes from the airplane? What have they said to you?
Like,
screw your airplane?
One man was very angry because he said that it was pointing down. And we were in an airport. We were waiting to get on our plane. And he was like, "Why is your airplane pointing down?" And I was like, "Is it? I can't see it. It's on the back of my arm."
Can I tell you how I've never thought of that in my entire life?
My sister was like, "It's not." And I was like, "Sir, I'm sorry."
I feel like it's just like straight. I don't know. It's Christy, I haven't thought about that. Why did you think? Okay, keep going.
So yeah, he was really upset because I think we were about to get on a plane and he seemed to be thinking that I was going to somehow cause our plane to crash by having this.
Oh,
it was weird. It was very weird. There was another man who
That man needs some anti-anxiety meds. I speak as someone who knows.
I speak as someone who takes anti-anxiety meds to get on an airplane.
Strong red wine or whatever.
Sir, let me introduce you to this medicine I have.
I was going to say, because if you see that and you're like, "I'm going to speak to this person and confront them," like that's a lot.
And I had this other man in a bar yell at me because he came over and he was like, "Oh, look at your tattoo." And I was like, "Yeah, thanks." And he was like, "What does it mean?" And I was like, it doesn't. I got it on Friday the 13th with some friends." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "No, it has to mean something." And I was like,
"It absolutely does not.
It does not." And he was like, "No, my daughter has a tattoo and it means something." And I was like, "That's great.
Incredible logic."
And then he got really angry and stormed off. And
Christy, I have a cat. You must have a cat. I'm allergic to cats.
Exists in this situation, so it must exist in all
situations. Right? What? This is what's going to happen when you shut down the humanities, guys.
This is exactly what's happening.
That critical thinking.
Critical thinking is dying off, and I'm getting yelled at.
Wow, that sucks. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for you because I like your tattoo. I think it's quite nice.
I mean, it's a great tattoo, and you know what? For $25, it's a really well done tattoo.
It totally is, and I enjoy it. And well, Christy, I feel like I'm at the end.
Yeah, no,
I think we're moving into the dance part of this podcast. I've had
quite a lot of vodka Crystal Light now. So.
I can't believe that's what you did. You didn't even have a mixer.
There is
one. I love it. Yes. Here's to that, and here's to Casa Bonita.
Here's to Casa Bonita, and I'll update you all next week.
And we'll probably be talking about something really upsetting. Sorry.
Bye.
Bye.